United States against Wallace is the next case for argument.
Good morning. My name is Steve Evans. I represent Richard Wallace and Downstate Transportation. These appeals have been consolidated by this court.
Mr. Evans, you can raise the podium. There's a switch on the right-hand side.
Inside. Now stop it, and then we'll go back.
Right, it goes in both directions. That's right.
I think I got it now. Mr. Wallace ran Downstate Transportation, which provided Medicaid transportation services. These are non-emergency transportation services, and Downstate covered the greater part of southern Illinois from St. Louis east south to the Kentucky border. He and Downstate were indicted one count of Medicaid fraud and 17 counts of mail fraud predicated on the Medicaid fraud count. They were accused of submitting a rate that was not allowed by the Department of Public Aid for purposes of reimbursement. The rate that was submitted was a community rate that was submitted pursuant to the Illinois Administrative Code. The law in this case is controlled by the Administrative Code, Title 89, Section 140.492. That code section set forth several different rate structures that applied to different types of classes of non-emergency transportation providers.
Mr. Evans, I mean, that may be, although I have to confess, this isn't my question, but I have to confess some bemusement at the thought that Carterville gets to regulate the entire southern Illinois region, since I understand Carterville is fairly small, and a lot of these trips never touched Carterville. But I'm looking right now at the government's appendix, page 37. It's exhibit 20C, with line after line after line where the box total loaded miles is filled in with numbers. And I just have trouble seeing that as anything but a claim that these were the loaded miles. I don't see anything in here about these are the community rate miles. These are a combination of, you know, office to patient, home to medical facility miles. I don't see anything like that. It looks like a misleading invoice.
The problem with that, Judge, is that Mr. Wallace was not charged with signing a misleading invoice, as you just described. He was charged with submission of a rate that the department claimed, that the government claimed, was fraudulent because of the way the rate was structured.
I'm looking at the indictment now, and the indictment charges him with knowingly and intentionally devising and intended to devise a scheme and artifice to defraud and so forth by submitting claims for services not rendered and not rendered to the extent claimed. And then it goes through, obviously, more detail, not worth reading right now. But it seems to me this is well within the language of the indictment.
And ultimately in the indictment, when we get to paragraphs 13 and 14 of the indictment, that's where the government narrowed its focus on this case. Paragraph 13 deals with the government's assertion that the handbook for transportation providers set forth certain standards. Paragraph 14 of the indictment discusses what the handbook states regarding non-covered services, one of those non-covered services being a general prohibition for charges for mileage other than loaded miles. It is then...
I'm not sure. Which part of the indictment are you looking at?
Paragraphs 13 and 14, Your Honor.
Oh, okay.
At the close of paragraph...
Well, that paragraph 13 just describes the handbook, and paragraph 14 describes the... further describes the handbook, but I don't see where that narrows the introductory language I was just looking at.
The final sentence in paragraph 14, where it says loaded miles are those in which the provider actually transports an individual and then cites the administrative code, that's where this case got narrowed up, and that was the issue in this case.
Narrow anything?
Because
the indictment charges a scheme to defraud. The crime is the scheme. And here, one might think this scheme is being carried out by inserting an untrue statement in a box labeled loaded miles. Right? I gather your client conceded at trial that that representation was false in all of those forms.
we didn't concede that that representation was false. The defense in this case, and what was never contested, was what the rate was that Mr. Wallace had obtained, submitted to the department, and what the department thereafter approved.
I don't understand the significance of that. Carterville may be able to define the community rate, that is, the rate per mile driven, but it can't change the federal rule that compensation is for loaded miles. Now, I could easily understand if your client had gone to the agency and said, look, at least in one county, what they want me to do is, instead of $250 a mile for loaded miles, they want me to charge $125 for all miles. I just want to make sure that I'm not stuck in a position where I have to charge $125 for loaded miles, that I can do it one way or the other. But, of course, your client didn't go through anything like that process. He just falsely put loaded miles in the box. But how does one avoid the claim, the fact that that's a scheme to deceive the government about what's going on?
I beg to differ with you, Your Honor, because the scheme that the government put forth here was the scheme to obtain the rate to evade what the government said was a prohibition on loaded miles. And if I could come back to Judge Wood.
Could I just maybe try what Judge Easterbrook was saying a little bit differently? One issue is, what are you going to charge per mile? That's the rate. Another issue is, which miles driven are reimbursable? And that's the loaded miles point. Now, you can change, you can get a higher rate per mile if you're not going to get compensated for the initial leg of the trip. I understand that, but I don't see any of that reflected in these boxes filled in with loaded miles. They weren't loaded miles. They were a composite of loaded miles and sort of deadhead transportation.
And that's where we come back to, once again, to touch on one of your previous questions, Judge Wood, the code section, which is very clear as to the other providers requiring that they can only be reimbursed for loaded miles, and then allowing a taxi cab provider to operate under a rate set by its municipality.
That's a rate, though. I keep coming back to that. If Carterville wants taxi cabs in Carterville to charge in a different way, that's Carterville's business. But when you begin to plug into the federal program, the community rate will apply, but I don't see why Carterville has the authority to specify loaded or unloaded miles.
Because the administrative code section provides the municipality with that capability, Your Honor.
I don't understand that at all. I don't.
No, that's no. What says that? When I see something like community rate, what I see is the rate per mile. The taxi cab commission in Chicago tells the taxis what they can charge per mile.
Exactly.
But it can't override a federal rule saying which miles are billable.
But we don't have that federal rule in this case.
Certainly we do. There's not only the handbook that says the only billable miles are the loaded miles, but there is also your client's representation to the federal government that he was charging for loaded miles.
But I think the way that the indictment was drafted, the way the case was prosecuted there, we have to draw a distinction between that with all respect, Judge Easterbrook. If the indictment had said, you have filled out these forms improperly to commit fraud because you have misrepresented information contained on those forms, I think that you are both absolutely correct. But the indictment in this case charged the scheme based on the submission of the rate. And the problem we get to, and just as the whoever regulates the taxi cabs here in Cook County has the authority to regulate those cabs, we then go to subsection D of the administrative code section that says the taxi cab shall be reimbursed at the community rate. The department, by leaving that there...
Well, let me put it a different way, counsel. You are simply assuming that the word rate includes not only the fee per mile, but also the definition of which miles are compensable.
Correct.
But you don't point to any federal statute or regulation establishing the second part of the proposition.
That is absolutely correct, Judge, and this is why this is such an important factor in a criminal case where the law must put one on notice.
There's no problem at all with a criminal prosecution where the box says loaded miles and your client writes in what appears to be about three times the number of loaded miles. One, the normal word for that behavior is fraud.
The distinction on that is that once the department approves the locally established rate, the provider then is allowed to bill pursuant to that rate. Now, we get into all sorts of problems with these providers and with the Department of Public Aid, and as this Court's well aware of the bureaucracy of Medicaid and all of the regulations that are out there, is the provider has to use those templates to bill for its services. But the underlying issue and the first point in this case is that this rate was submitted and proposed to the department and thereafter approved. And when you look at the administrative code sections, and particularly the amendments in 2006 to the same code, it is clear by the statutory construction that the department is carving out an exception for locally established rates, just as the Cook County Board, or Taxi Regulatory Authority, is now allowing surcharges because of the cost of gas. Well, that, again, is a locally established rate that presumably, if it was being billed through the department, under a taxi cab status, the department would have no problem paying. That is what we have here. Now, the prohibition of unloaded miles, there was an easy solution to this case in the administrative code, or to go so far as in the handbook and say that regardless of your locally established rate, we're not going to reimburse for unloaded miles. But again, in the context of a criminal case, that was not done here.
If you want to save rebuttal time, I don't know if you care about that, but you're using it.
I would like to just touch briefly on the other bad acts issue in this case. The interjection of that, there was insufficient evidence under the standards that apply to those requirements to submit that. Agent Minden, who was the witness who provided that testimony, knew nothing about how to establish excess miles as controlled by the Illinois statute in the case. And it was highly prejudicial for that to come in. And I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Certainly, Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Coonan.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the Court. Other evidence as far as the scheme to defraud, despite or in addition to the transportation invoice that the Court was addressing earlier, is that when the defendants were approached by the state and then later audited, the defendants went ahead and claimed, you know, they were billing according to the community rate. It was from Carterville. They billed from the office to the point of pickup and then to the point of drop-off. But they, you know, and this alludes to the last thing that counsel was indicating as far as any 404B evidence, that they were going ahead and in charging what they said, sorry, in a response to the state, that this would save money because they were going to bill not from just the office, as I had alluded earlier, but from drivers that were closer, that they had drivers out in 16 or so different counties that could be closer to these points of pickup and drop-off. What Agent Minden had done was done the mileage and, you know, figured out, no, it wasn't any closer on these 17 counts that were brought in addition to the health care claim, but went ahead and showed that even if there was some hypothetical validity to the community rate and that you could hypothetically bill from your business office, they weren't doing it. They were billing beyond that, and that's why the numbers are so big in Exhibit, I believe, 47.
Mr. Coonan, could I ask, was everybody happy with the Carterville rate applying? You know, for example, I don't know where these 16 counties were, but Carterville isn't in all 16 of them. to apply to any of the counties to the trips that didn't ever touch Carterville? The city of Chicago likes to regulate lots of things too, but it really only regulates the taxis that originate trips here or that. Actually, not even the ones that come in. There are suburban taxi regulation boards as well. There's a limit to how far a municipality can regulate. But everybody said, oh, it's fine for the Carterville. We'll just adopt the Carterville rate for this entire southern Illinois region.
Your Honor, I don't know of anybody who found it to be the correct way of doing things. I do believe that the Medicaid folks were fine with the actual rate, the $1.30, and with a provider or pickup charge of $3, but not to the amount of, you know, starting from the business and other excessive miles.
Well, the unloaded
that were
miles, yeah, because of the book. The jury was instructed that if it found there was an ambiguity in the Illinois Administrative Code, then the government had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant's interpretation of the code was unreasonable. Is it possible that that instruction misled the jury into thinking that so long as the defendants unreasonably interpreted the code, they were guilty of fraud?
Your Honor, if I can speak bluntly, it certainly didn't help the government in its prosecution that it had now a second hoop to persuade the jury. The government submits that it was enough, you know, proof to show the jury, you know, what the background was, what the scheme to defraud, but that the cautionary instruction that the district judge gave when he made it tougher is that it kind of gave the defense an additional way out, that if a jury had found something different, that it was a reasonable interpretation, that they could, you know, find that the jury could find the defendants not guilty.
You know, in the brief you seem to say that Mr. Wallace obtained the Cardiff ordinance as part of the scheme to defraud. What evidence is there that the ordinance itself was part of the scheme?
Well, first, Your Honor, it's a factual background, but more specifically is that in that ordinance is how he's going ahead and rationalizing or part of the scheme to go ahead and add all these additional miles in that second paragraph of the ordinance where they allow, hey, this ordinance allows me to bill from the business office, not just the pickup point or drop-off like any, I think it was alluded earlier by the court as any Chicago taxi, but from, you know, from a place that could be miles, if not counties, away.
So, I mean, but again, what's the evidence that, you know, this was part of this whole scheme? I mean, where does that come from? Is it some unspoken something that hung over the trial?
Well, I mean, and Your Honor, I'm trying to think about some of the evidence that was not allowed because of motions in limine by the orders of the district judge.
So should that have even been something that we were apprised of, if there were motions in limine about it?
And sorry, Your Honor, it was placed in the indictment by the government, and it was anticipating the defense that had been made during the audit that the defendants correctly billed because of the community rate. So my understanding is the government was being forthright by including that in the indictment.
So how much of the trial was taken up by evidence of how this community rate came to be?
Your Honor, there were, I believe, two witnesses from the clerk's office of the city of Carterville that testified as to how the ordinance was passed.
Mm-hmm. So not too much. And was that evidence was permitted?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. It was, and I don't know if this is helpful in answering the question, Your Honor, but there was no suggestion that the city of Carterville was a unindicted co-conspirator or anything of that nature, Your Honor.
What about some of the officials of the city of Carterville?
I mean, you know, there was no evidence put forth to suggest that there was any wrongdoing. There was no evidence that the defendant's taxi service did anything but handle Medicaid programs. That there's no evidence to suggest that they ran a normal taxi service to the citizens of the city of Carterville or anything to that extent. Anyway, if I may go back to the community rate and the response that the defendants had to the state, we have the thing of excess miles, but they're not even abiding by their own community rate because they're charging, as the court also noted, they're charging for folks who are not even coming or going from the city of Carterville. And they went ahead and admit that they weren't doing as much in a response to the audit. There was a overpayment in those 2 years, 2001 and 2002, of $505,000. And that's a significant amount, I would submit to the court, for a sole proprietorship that the defendants were in Southern Illinois. They were also, as alleged in the later accounts of the indictment, and which the jury found guilty verdicts, of similar claims made after the audit. The audit was in 2003, and the defendants were notified by the state of the audit and results of the audit, but still the billing occurred by the defendants until May of 2004. Is there anything else that I could address for the court? Any questions? All right. Well, thank you very much.
Mr. Coonan, anything further, Mr. Evans?
The questions regarding the scheme issue, again, are central to this case because the government chose to charge that it was the scheme to obtain the ordinance and submit it to the department that violated the law in this case. The problem with that is that the administrative code, which is the law, allows a local municipality to set a rate. Now, whether or not that rate should apply to municipalities outside of Carterville or counties outside of the counties governing Carterville was not the issue in this case. It's not the criminal issue in this case. Perhaps it's for the civil audit case, but not for this case. What this case was about was Mr. Wallace told or advised that the rate that he submitted was improper under the law in place. The law said you can submit a community rate. The department chose to approve his company as a provider. When we get into all of this indictment, and I pulled it out because we do, we have, I think, 11 paragraphs talking about the scheme to get these rates, but that is allowed for in the code. What ultimately comes back is that the code does not tell a taxicab provider under a locally established rate that they cannot submit reimbursements for unloaded miles. And without that, there's no clear rule that can subject Mr. Wallace and his company to criminal conduct. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.